Our last but certainly not least is Dr. Andrew Pleasant, who works for the Canyon Ranch Institute. He's the Senior Director for Health Literacy and Research, and the Canyon Ranch Institute is a 501c nonprofit.
Thank you. So this is going to be a little different because this is a small program, a pilot of a small program, the very first time we launched it. So it was more of a learning exercise. So actually right now in this community, we're running the full program for the first time, literally Saturday and next Saturday and the Saturday after that. So it's a learning experience. We also have nothing to disclose. Someday APHA is going to learn this slide waste time. just a little background on Canyon Ranch Institute is, as you said, thank you, a 501c3 nonprofit public charity. In international terms, that means it's a non-governmental organization, is how you would call it around the world. Our mission is really specific, actually, to try to improve the health of everyone. Why? To prove what a true healthcare system in the United States and globally would look like instead of what most of us have, which is a sick care system, right? We wait for people to get sick and then we treat them. The healthcare system would focus on preventing chronic disease. So we're trying to move upstream in that direction, in particular in low-income communities in the United States and globally as well. We've worked in multiple places. So this moving upstream to reach optimal health and wellness, we base it on three basic pillars. One is integrative health. So all our programs address mind, body, spirit, and emotion. We also base all of our programs on the best practices of health literacy. We look at our community partners because we do everything through a local community partnership. We never go into a community individually. It always is in tandem with a local resource. That is part of health literacy, the empowerment of the local community, and we do that to try to prevent chronic disease. We have a lot of partners. We do a lot of different programs, as I said, around the world. Some of those names you'll recognize, some of them you won't. But it ranges everything from what I'm going to talk about today, a very small middle school in a mid-sized community, to very large multinational organizations. We work in the United States, as I said, in a number of communities. Today we'll talk about one of the programs in Tucson, Arizona, in the southwestern United States. And so why? We're looking at adolescent health. This whole session is about school-based health. So our view is really pretty simple, and this is true around the world, right? If children grow up in a safe and supportive environment, including family, neighborhoods, and schools, with a safe built environment, a safe social environment, they're more likely to be productive and healthy throughout their entire lives. So if you get them early, you get them for a very long time if you succeed at it. And that, of course, is the trick. So that's why we've created what we call the Healthy Community Program. There's that integrative health model I mentioned, mind, body, spirit, emotion, very community-based, health literate, and targeting improving health outcomes. It's one of the things at Canyon Ranch Institute that we will never launch a community-based intervention without some ability to measure change in an objective health status. So self-reported health is fabulous, and we do that a lot, but we would always include like a blood work value or an act, you know, you can, they demonstrate changes in exercise capacity, et cetera. So Apollo Middle Schools are the name of the school in South Tucson. So middle schools here in the United States generally serve somewhere between 6th and 9th grade levels. And there's some little variation. Sometimes they're 8th and 9th, sometimes 7, 8, and 9, sometimes 6, 7, and 8. They change a little bit. This one now, as of this year, serves 7th and 8th grade students. But the program is based at the school, but it's trying to reach the entire neighborhood. And for the United States, this school happens to have some really unique characteristics that make this program possible. It has built into the school, a middle school, what we call a demonstration kitchen. So you can actually demonstrate using a kitchen stove, everything, to an audience how to prepare food. And then it has four other stations where the participants can go do it themselves and do hands-on cooking based in the school, which that's rare around the world, actually, to have that capacity. It has multiple exercise facilities, so there's two different exercise rooms, one for strength and weights and one for cardio and endurance, and then there's a whole gym. And finally, we, to make this program work, built a community garden outside but on school grounds. So we're growing organic and natural fruits and vegetables right there on the school. And we actually just got certified by the state of Arizona, which was a long process. So the school can use what we grow in that garden for their own meals. So the students actually get to go out and pick vegetables and then bring it into the school cafeteria, and then they have it for lunch. And in the demonstration kitchen, they can do the same thing, go out and pick it and cook it themselves right there and then make a snack. So that's really pretty rare. So that's why we launched this pilot. We partnered with a local medical practice, a federally qualified community health center, which is a medical facility in the U.S. that serves low-income communities pretty much explicitly. The school itself, we did an evaluation pre and post. I'll share some of that with you. In this initial pilot, we did it in four sessions, one on each Saturday morning for 4 hours each. It included physical activity, stress management, cooking and nutrition, and gardening. So we actually rotated groups around through each of those different activities every day. We had a total of 82 adults and youth that did at least some part. So they showed up at least once in those four sessions. The sample size for the evaluation is smaller than that, of course, because they didn't all show up all the time. So I'm not going to do statistical analysis. I'm just going to tell you the raw outcomes. But most people attended three of the four sessions. There's a real, in these communities, low-income Hispanic Latino communities in the Southwest, when you say parent, you need to mean a lot more people than a biological parent, because a lot of children will live with their grandparents or with an aunt or with an uncle or with a friend of the family, because a lot of these individuals are not legally documented to live in the United States, so there's a great deal of transition in families always. The children were between 6 and 14 years old, and as I said, it was largely Hispanic Latino community, but not only. And the pictures as we go through are actual participants experiencing the pilot. So what happened as a result of this, and it was just four Saturdays for 4 hours, a total of 16 hours contact time for those who went to the whole thing, which wasn't everybody. Still, on average, all the adults lost weight, and in particular, one person lost 35 pounds. All of the adults had lower blood pressure, and in particular, you can see that's a pretty dramatic drop from 147 over 74 to 126 over 85. That's almost from hypertension to being normal again over 4 weeks. Lower blood glucose on average, so right, we did a finger prick of blood, so that's a really huge drop of 40.3 points. And people told us that they had two healthy days per month, whereas before they were either mentally or physically unhealthy at the end of the program. And it goes on, right, they increased exercise. This is a fabulous one in this community, in the United States in general. They ate as a family together almost three times more per week. Not only because of the garden, but in part because of the garden, but also because part of the topics were how to shop on a budget and how to cook on a budget. The participants ran out of food in their household less each month by the end of the month. These other two points here are something we almost always reach in our programs, a very significant and large reduction in stress and depression, and an increase in health literacy of just short of 25%. So, right, what does that mean? Adults actually started managing their life better. They spent more time with their family. Their physical and mental health improved. And they have gained skills to navigate the world in a healthier way. For the children, much the same, right? It's a drop in lower blood pressure of a little more than 8 over 4 points. A day and a half less unhealthy days per month. They said they were happier, which is pretty cool for a child to say. They also said they were healthier. They increased the amount of exercise by over 60%. They could identify the food groups, sort of, you know, a knowledge test more accurately at post. A huge decrease. This goes along with the families eating more together, right? A 75% decrease watching TV or playing video games. So they moved away from the couch and moved into exercise and moved into spending time with their families. And they liked what they liked best, which was actually sort of surprising to us. They liked cooking the best, and then gardening, and then exercise, and then stress management in terms of the activities. they said, the kids said, that their parents took them to eat at a restaurant with a drive-through window less often, right? Which was, we thought, great that the kids told us that. And in other programs, we've actually had children become the instigators of that and say to mom and dad, remember what they told us in the program, we're not supposed to go to a restaurant with a drive-through window. And so they don't, right? And there's the increase in eating with family again. They're drinking less soda. They're drinking more water. They're eating more fruits and vegetables. And in the U.S., there's a widely spread perception, which is incorrect, that children don't like fruits and vegetables, but it's spread to children, so they believe it too. So, and then the parents believe it, and they say there's nothing we can do. We can't get them to eat fruits and vegetables, but we do it all the time. So it's entirely possible. And how? You engage them in the cooking and the preparation and the growing so they get familiar with it, and then they want to help make it. And so they did help prepare dinner at home more often, and they're eating less snacks in front of the TV. So that was the pilot, as I said. So that was a year ago now, almost to the date that that ended. So based on those outcomes, here's what we've done and what we're putting into place now as we speak, as I said. Right, it was 4 sessions. We've increased it to 6, but we spread it out over 8 weeks. So it's 2 weeks on, 1 week off, 2 weeks on, 1 week off, and then 2 weeks on to try to increase the effect of the intervention, both by spreading out the time frame, but also increasing the contact time that every participant has in the program, assuming they come to every session. We started it an hour later, which seems to make it easier for families to get there. When we started it an hour earlier, we included a free breakfast. Now it's an hour later, so we assume that they've eaten and we cut off the free breakfast, but they still get a free meal as part of the cooking every Saturday. So it's not, which is really important in this community. It's part of the driver for people to show up, is we know they're going to get a good tasting meal. So we expanded also the scope of the intervention to go to goal setting and social support, because that's really critical in people making healthy behavior changes. So, right, it's like, what would you like to get out of this program? Let's identify some small, manageable steps that you can change in your life and your child's life in 8 weeks. And we're hoping this year, like I said, we had 80 participants in total over all 4 weeks last year. We're hoping to go to 100 every Saturday. We're not quite there yet, so we're constantly manipulating our recruitment policies. Last week, for example, we told participants who did show up, if they came next week with somebody new, a new family, a friend, we'll give them a $5 gas card, which in that community, a $5 gas card can make a big difference for people. And instead of our staff giving the program, this is probably the biggest change this year, we've trained a team of people fully certified already in exercise, nutrition and cooking, social support, stress management. And so they're giving the program, which our goal is, of course, to make this sustainable and transferable. So it's not just in Tucson. So we needed to take this step to prove we could do that, that we can now hold the program anywhere. Doesn't have to be where we're based. We also included this year a volunteer cadre, so we've got over 50 volunteers. Not all of them are going to show up every Saturday, but some of them do. Why? Because when you got kids and adults in a garden, you need more than one set of eyes, right? Especially when they're harvesting with scissors or planting with a trowel, or if they're in a kitchen cooking, you need a volunteer. You need somebody at each cooking station just to maintain safety. We added free childcare for children who are too young to go through the program. We went to a lot of community sports events and safety awareness events and things at the school to spread flyers and talk about the program. Probably most successfully in terms of recruiting actually was we did a kickoff event and had the school band and orchestra play at the kickoff event. Why? Because who comes to those? The parents, right? They get to see their kids perform. So we had a huge turnout at that event. So if you need to recruit people, bring the band. It works really well. And we shifted from just recruiting through the school like we did last year to going direct to adults, which was a big difference. So all in all, right, here's just some more. There's people gardening. There's the evaluation being conducted. We did height, weight, BMI, and blood pressure, and exercise session on the lower left. And then there's a family working together to learn how to make actually a smoothie last year. So it was all focused on the multiple dimensions of health. Of course, this year will be the true test because we'll have a bigger sample size and it changed the program in some ways, but it seems that we, and this is a very large group of people, and actually should include all the parents and all the kids and all the teachers who helped us, have developed a program that seems to be effective in doing exactly what you all were talking about the whole session, which is how to improve the health of young people and their families in schools. And that's our story, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So now we have good times for questions for any of our presenters. I don't know if you want to come up here now or if you want to stay in the audience. I want to make sure everyone can hear. Whatever you guys feel most comfortable doing, it might be easier. You want to come up, those who presented? And then, wonderful. I thought all four presentations were very interesting and show how important the school is in regards to health or with HPV vaccine, too. That's one of my questions. But we'll see what questions people have first. Questions from the audience for any of our presenters? Please.
Charter on health literacy. So we do it two ways, but that is not specifically the self-report and the model, right? If you make it goes find it, help people find information, understand information, communicate information, evaluate it in their own life, and then use it to make an informed decision. So we just do a self-report on each of those steps of the logic model of the Calgary Charter framework. We've used that quite a bit the last couple of years. I haven't published it yet, but we're just about at a big enough sample size to make that happen. So it's really easy. It's just 5 self-reported questions, but it works, and it tends to correlate with how status changes across a lot of cultural contexts.
Okay. Other questions? Yes, please.
Yeah, I have a question. So you said that current adolescents don't work out. Okay. But is there any? Do you have any information about current adolescents are not really unhealthy compared to any other Asian countries or any parts of the world? So any clinical data or?
Just before you answer, I'm sorry, I forgot they're recording this, so if you can use the mic when you answer and repeat the question so that they can record. We'll get the one.
I did literature review, OECD data, so I don't know exactly other Asian country physical activity level. So I'm gonna some further study comparing so other Asian country. I don't know exactly some difference Korean and other Asian country.
Okay, I just wondered is there any obesity problem or any other healthy problem because they don't work out because of many other reasons like.
I'm gonna add some study about other countries. Thank you.
Stay tuned and find out. Great. Other questions? Yes, please.
I'd like to ask you, so it's like, it seems, it's almost an indicator of acculturation more than education, isn't it? This process, or is it not?
Some of the that come here, they're in the community. nothing to do with ADHD. So I think from the qualitative data perspective, you're right, a combination is a big deal, like the how long stay in the United States exposed by the information here.
And then what's going to happen when they go back based on that, right? Because they're bringing a different set of cultural values and practices now into a different setting.
Yeah, that's exactly. Or what if we call their friends in China? Hey, I got the vaccination in China. No, I got the vaccine. Yeah, what is the case difference about in China? Yeah, it's very interesting to look at with the calculation because this is an increasing cohort or sub-ethnic groups of population. Just huge number, and they migrate across two continents seasonally.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah, because why is again speaking with mainly American students 10 years ago, and year 2 and 3 year plus students were almost matched them exactly in terms of their positions on whether they had the vaccine, the difference between genders was just exactly the same, the knowledge level of questions almost exactly the same. So.
Yeah, I guess it's there's a time gap. Yeah, among different countries regarding.
Any other questions?
Well, I have a question, Dr. Long.
Okay.
So, how did you measure the social environment of the school health programs? Like, did you actually measure this? Because you actually put the social environment.
Social environment means we care about the students, the teachers, and the, all the faculty in school. So we have some policies. If a student they have study problem, and we give the resource to him.
To the teacher.
Teacher, student, and all the members in school.
Can I ask, Dr. Lowe, is the program, was it required for schools to participate in the healthy promoting schools? Was it a requirement? Like,
You mean it is
a law?
No. But the local Department of Education, they hope all the schools participate.
Okay. Encouraging. I had any other question? Okay, I have a question for each of you. I found all of the presentations wonderful. So, Dr. Mook, what was there a definition that the youth used for what they considered healthy? It seemed like it was just between healthy and unhealthy, but was there a requirement or like a definition of what that meant?
So, people count and 5 scale.
Okay.
So, 1 is unhealthy, and 2, 5 are very healthy.
Okay. But it doesn't say what healthy is defined at. Like, it could be physical health or mental health or
overall
health. Okay. And is PE required in Korea then? The classes.
Yeah, classes. Yeah, mandatory. Depending on some curriculum, middle school and high school is different. And
right.
Similar class.
Mm-hmm.
2 or 3 times a week.
Okay.
Yeah, PE class.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But in your treatment, I still, 2 week, 1 time, 2, 3 times. Yes.
Yeah. So does that mean they didn't go because of the options?
But it's a regular PE. Regular PE is like ordinarily physical activity, like 3 categories. First one is ordinary physical activity, is a control variable, and school physical activities, physical education class, and sport team in school. So I analyze association, school, PE class, and sports team at school, and house.
Okay. Dr. ago, it was very, because I used to work with adolescent teens, so HPV is something very interesting to me. I thought it was really interesting that if their best friend had had the vaccine, they were more likely to get it. Mm-hmm. So do you know if there's any outreach efforts, like using more...
Like a start from or mm-hmm. What I know that if there is no intervention program targeting Chinese international students,
mm-hmm.
So my other studies, I noticed that those who have received the vaccine, mm-hmm. basically, when the international students are arriving in the United States, they need to go through a physical examination test in the hospital. They have to all have to go once to get some TB test, and other physical examinations.
Mm-hmm.
So during the examination, they were told by the nurses that, you can also get this vaccine. So that's why they got vaccinated.
Oh. Okay.
So it's school health clinic-based vaccination.
Right. Okay.
But there is no intervention program targeting this population to promote the
vaccination. Right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when they asked about their best friend, is the best friend also a fellow student from China, or did they ask anything about... I'm just thinking it's a great way from peer and group.
Well, the survey data, I did not show, there's nothing, more explanation to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did another qualitative study, the focus group study of 10 focus groups.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about your friend told them about this vaccine, the friend told them who got vaccinated in the hospital, and told them, I got this vaccine, it's a, HPV vaccine preventing the vaccine. Some of them even bring this up, say, hey, I think my friend told me about the vaccine, but I don't know much about it. My friend told me she don't understand it that well.
Uh-huh.
They mentioned their experiences learning this information from their friends.
Okay.
Also, the other sources of information, including internet. So they actually read something on Facebook, or Chinese version of Facebook called Renren.
Uh-huh.
It's like a Facebook thing in China. We read about something about HPV vaccine over there.
Mm.
So internet, friends, are the two major resources for those who have heard about HPV vaccine.
Yeah,
it's
interesting.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. And Dr. Pleasant, first I just have to ask, so the fourth...
Andrew.
Okay, I know, but I just... It's wonderful. I just am curious, the one person that lost the 35 pounds, was that literally in the time period of the program, which is a month?
Yeah.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that was healthy?
there's really high rates of obesity.
Okay, so it really was
so
appropriate.
35 pounds in some people's case is a couple percent of total body weight.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. And then actually a follow-up question. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I just
followed that. I wondered, could the people that were in the pilot, can they continue in this one?
And they have.
Okay, that's what I...
Yeah. I know them. So I see them, and I'm like, oh, you're coming back this year. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. So got a lot of positive feedback. But this is a community that doesn't get a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So they notice when somebody does something.
Cares.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Actually, along with that,
mm-hmm.
I was very surprised to see the blood pressure change,
mm-hmm.
the average change, and blood pressure change. So you actually measure the blood pressure before and That's
We always have an objective health indicator like that for all of our programs. Because our goal is to reduce health disparities and get people healthier. So if we can't say we did that, then we can't say anything. Some sort of advocate for that.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, put in a health status indicator. If you're going to tell people you're going to change health, then find out if you actually did it or not.
Mm-hmm. I think using the biomarker
costs a little more, but takes a little more time, but it's worth it.
And with it, do you link in with the clinics that these people would normally be going to anyway so that they could do a continual follow-up?
In all of our programs we do, in this one, we recruited through a local clinic in FQHC, so we got a lot of their families to come. With this program in general, that probably won't always happen because it's always going to be school-based.
Mm-hmm.
So we give people's health outcomes right back to them the moment we take it.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't just take the blood pressure. Here's your blood pressure, and we always have an MD on site. So if someone has high blood pressure or high glucose, we sit it down with the doctor right then. So we have given people their initial diagnosis of diabetes, or you know, you're overweight, your children are overweight, you're obese, because they might not have been to the doctor for you.
Right, and you don't want to lose the opportunity when they're there.
No, that's part of the intervention.
Excellent, great, great. Those were my questions. Any other questions from them? Wonderful, let's give them a hand. Excellent, thank you so much.